from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Support for Locked On Giants Baseball comes from Manscaped, number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You may have seen them on Shark Tank. Manscaping offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% off at manscaped.com with promo code LOCKEDON. Coming up on today's show, the Giants were off yesterday, so we're going to do some Q&A. Thank you so much to everyone who asked questions on Twitter. I want to answer a question from last Friday when we did Q&A that I didn't get a chance to get to because it was submitted after we started the podcast. It's from 22 Sweet Swing. He asks, does Alex Dickerson's high batting average on balls in play bother you more than his loss of playing time to injury? So I just wanted to answer this question because I think it is really a important question, because I think there's a lot of, I don't want to call it misunderstanding, but a lot of times we associate batting average on balls in play with just pure luck, but I don't really believe that to be the case. So I definitely would say that his injuries, you know, the missing time due to the back injury is more concerning than the batting average on balls in play, certainly. So the thing about Dickerson's average on balls in play is that it's 419, which is definitely something that's unsustainable. So it's good that we're even having that conversation. But at the same time, if you're hitting 349 with a 405 on base and a 670 slugging, we should expect to see some unsustainability in your profile, because either Alex Dickerson is Mike Trout or he's not going to be able to sustain the level of play that he's been producing. And it should be noted too, that's his line, including his time with the Padres this year, which was really bad. So if you look at just his record with the Giants, it's even better than that. So it's not surprising at all to see some signs of unsustainability within that line, if that makes any sense. The beautiful thing about Dickerson is that if we look back at his career, he played some in 2015 and definitely a lot more in 2016. So now we can look at his career numbers, and he has a 314 batting average on balls in play, which seems much more reasonable and something that could easily be his norm, or it could be higher. We don't know for sure where it's going to settle and stabilize, but 314 doesn't look like a red flag at all, and that's his career number. And even with that 314 career average on balls in play, he's hitting 283 with a 352 on base and 512 slugging, so that's about 30% above average. So I don't really have any concerns about that for him. And even looking at the projections, Steamer specifically is very optimistic on Dickerson and sees him producing a 338 average on balls in play moving forward, so higher than his career average. It's probably buying into the fact that he's been able to do really well in that department this season. So with that projection of a 338 average on balls in play, it has him at a slash line of 291 average, 356 on base, 483 slugging, 20% above average offensively. Other luck indicators are home run to fly ball ratio. If you're homering on like 40% of your fly balls, that is unsustainable. And so you can expect the power numbers to come down dramatically. But the problem is when those numbers are inflated, like you have a high BABIP or a high home run to fly ball ratio, and yet your production is modest, maybe just slightly above average, that's when you're really concerned, because it's like, well, we expect a ton of regression, but you're still not that good, even with these really inflated numbers that won't last. But when you're just performing like the best player in MLB, essentially, you do expect to see some unsustainability unless you're the best player in MLB. So now answering your questions from today, Lane Stapp wants to know, with Solano the only other guy that can play short and panic as the most glaring weakness on the roster, could this be the last 2 days he has as a Giant? So yeah, it's definitely a position where they could look to make an upgrade. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is his last season with the Giants, although they still do control him for a very modest salary. He's only making a little under $4 million this season. He has minor league options. I think, you know, it would make more sense to just option him to the minors than to cut him loose. But I definitely think they'll look to make an infield upgrade in the next 24 hours. Cameron Armstrong asks, looking at Bum's next contract, whether with the Giants or not, what's he worth and what's he likely to get? I think that's a great question because there seems to be a lot of misperception out there or just a wide range of thinking out there as to what he's worth. Or the gap between perception and reality, in my opinion, seems to be large. Because on the one hand, we have Tim Kawakami, very respected journalist for The Athletic, writing about how the Giants could get him for 4 years and $125 million or 5 years and $140 million. He just kind of threw these numbers out there in an article the other day. And then I came on and said, pump the brakes a little bit. Dallas Keuchel is not that different from Bumgarner, and he wasn't able to secure a multi-year deal and ended up having to wait until the draft happened and then sign a one-year deal with Atlanta. So that's a $100 million-plus gap in perception versus reality. For Keuchel, I mean, the predictions for Keuchel were up there. People were thinking he would get close to $100 million or $90 million. MLB trade rumors predicted last year that Dallas Keuchel would get something in the range of 4 years and $82 million. And I think that that's a relatively fair comparison for what Bumgarner would be seeking. But the fact is, Keuchel was not able to get that. He ended up signing in June for 1 year and $13 million. Based on about $9 million per win above replacement, considering he's probably going to produce maybe about three WAR next season, and then there's an aging curve, I'm coming out to somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 or 5 years between $80 and $100 million. Coming up in the second half of the show, we'll continue to answer your questions from Twitter. There are several more to get to, so you're not going to want to miss it. We talk about baseball performance all the time on this show, but what about performance in the bedroom? That's right, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew is the first chewable with the same active FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. They can be taken anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Yes, I actually know someone who has tried this product and they have extremely positive things to report about its effectiveness. The best part about Blue Chew is that it's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no more visit to the doctor's office, waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness around this topic. Blue Chew is made in the United States and prepares and shipped direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit www.bluechew.com and get your first shipment free when you use special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB, and try it. It's free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. All right, as promised, here in the second half of the show, we'll continue to answer your questions from Twitter as we're just 24 hours away, approximately, from tomorrow's 1 p.m. Pacific time trading deadline. Justin Cooper says, I can't remember the last start in center field that wasn't Pilar. Who on the current roster plays center field if Pilar needs a day off? So Yastrzemski has played a little bit of center field. He's played some in the minors in center as well. He's played 8 innings out there in center this year in 3 games, but he played 180 innings in center in AAA this season. It was actually his primary position when he was in AAA. Cliff Larson says, if the Giants don't sell and get prospects, but were to make it as a wild card, but lose the play-in game, would it be worth it? I say no. That's him saying no. So, interesting question. I think that's the real question of the day. And to me, the answer is yes, it would be worth it. And there's multiple reasons for that. And number one is that I just don't think the return for Madison Bumgarner would be what people might think it would be. I mean, the return for Marcus Stroman, we talked about this yesterday, was very light. And Stroman is controllable in 2020, and Bumgarner is a free agent after the year. Yes, I would rather have Bumgarner in the postseason in 2019 than Stroman. But I think the extra amount you're willing to give up to have Bumgarner as opposed to Stroman is offset by the fact that Stroman is controllable for an extra season. So at the very least, I just don't think the return would be much greater, if any greater, for Bumgarner than it was for Stroman. And if that's the return, I'm just not sure it's worth it, especially if you make the postseason. I just think that there's tremendous value in having fan engagement all the way through the end of the season and having the team in that wild card game. You're getting people to renew their season tickets. People are excited. I just think that actually does have a lot of value. And some middling prospects, not top 100 prospects, is it really worth it? And the Giants would get potentially draft pick compensation if they hold on to Bumgarner, offering the qualifying offer, and if he rejects it. I very much understand the mentality of Farhan Zaidi about maximizing every opportunity you get. It's not about mortgaging the future. That is something I do not endorse. But if you have a chance, a real chance, even if it's 1 in 10 or 1 in 20, considering the market, I think it's a buyer's market. I do think they should trade some relief pitching. And if they don't do that, then yes, I think that that will be a waste. But I think they will do that. So I guess we'll have that analysis after the deadline passes. If they don't, I just don't think they're going to stand pat. I said about a week ago that the biggest mistake I think they could make is if they don't make any moves at all. If they're not going to trade Bumgarner, then they should be adding to the 2019 team without sacrificing the future. So they're not going to trade Bart, Ramos, Luciano, Canario, but could they acquire, you know, a better second baseman, some starting pitching depth? Yes, they could. And if it doesn't cost too much to do it, then it's worth it to me. Aiden Pierce says, I have real concerns about Pilar's plate discipline and ground balls. Can you see them making an upgrade in center field? If so, who and how? I'd rather Yaz be the everyday guy at this rate. It's definitely a fair point about Pilar, who is kind of a polarizing offensive figure around baseball. I think most players will tell you that they love his approach, but if you just look at the numbers, it's not pretty. He's been over 30% below average, and you know his walk rate is just 2.8%, which is minuscule. Swings at a lot of pitches outside the zone, takes a lot of pitches in the zone. He has this really weird issue where his plate discipline is not very good. But when he hits in bunches, and he's carried them for weeks at a time when he's been on. And he also is a really plus base runner, so he impacts the game in a positive way on the bases. And he's also been a good defensive player for the Giants. He's turned it around after a rough start in center field. He's been, you know, he's produced 3 defensive runs saved, has a positive UZR, UZR 150 in center, and he's been positive in right as well. So he's having a rebound season defensively after he, you know, was kind of negative in some categories last year. And I do think the base running value plays a role as well. So definitely could look to make an upgrade, but I think there are other areas of greater need, specifically second base and starting pitching, and I think they're okay with their collection of outfielders right now with Dickerson, Pilar, Yastrzemski, and Slater. But certainly it's a question for the offseason, in my opinion, where the question is, do you want to bring back Kevin Pilar? He's controllable for one additional season via arbitration. But for now, I mean, I think there are just other areas of greater need. So there were some more questions, but that is all the time we have. I want to thank everyone who asked questions on Twitter. We'll try to get to the ones we didn't get to next time. Remember, to get this show every single weekday, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider subscribing, rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, a trade deadline edition. We'll be back to cover any moves that get made, and I cannot wait. And until then, we'll see you next time.